Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. This year, the Battlefield franchise is 21 and legally able to drink. Should we buy them one, or have they been drinking all along? I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain. Here in the United States, we have this local law. It's kind of federal. And it is in regards to the drinking age of when people can consume alcohol, quote unquote, legally.
Yes, that's right.
And that happens to be at the age of 21.
The age of consent? No, the drinking age.
The drinking age.
Which is funny because the age of consent is younger, and so is the age in which you can join the military.
Yes. Imagine that. You know what else is 21 years old?
What else is 21 years old?
Battlefield.
That's right.
And I thought maybe we could talk about a bit of history of Battlefield. We talk about it a lot on the podcast. I will try to link some of those episodes in the show notes below. So come on out to hardwareasylum.com, hit that podcast link, and check out the show notes for this particular episode.
Well, longtime viewers or even maybe short-term viewers probably are aware that I am a huge fan of the Battlefield series and have been from the beginning, actually. Well, even before it was a thing, really.
Before the beginning. My first foray into Battlefield, or maybe the first time I started playing it regularly, was with Battlefield 2 Bad Company. I think you introduced me to that because you were saying, hey, the buildings can be destroyed.
Yeah, and it was kind of evolutionary, but it took a little bit to get there. Mm-hmm. Now, way back in the Wayback Machine, 21 years, wow. Electronic Arts actually published the original Battlefield 1942, and it was done by a little development company that maybe will sound a little familiar to you, Digital Illusions CE. Sound familiar?
No. Maybe as an acronym, though.
That's right, because if you acronym it, that's D-I-C-E, which is where DICE came from today. And they've been called DICE for a while, but we'll come back to that. But what made this game so much different from everything else out there? Because it was a multiplayer game, and at the time, there were quite a few different war games, was it was really one of the first games to explore roles. And they released the game with five separate classes, and each class had different weapons and abilities. They had, Scout, Assault, Anti-Tank, Medic, and Engineer.
Those sound familiar.
Well, they are largely unchanged since 1942, although there have been some changes, particularly with the latest release, but we're going to come back to that.
Well, what I'm getting at, though, is I think those are the same classes from Team Fortress.
It does sound like it, doesn't it? Except for, obviously, anti-tank, right?
Obviously.
But what they did was they made it so, say, the scout was your sniper, right? Your assault had heavy, fast weapons. Anti-tank had anti-tank weapons. Medic could revive and heal. And then the engineer had place guns and fortification-type stuff. And that's kind of what grabbed Battlefield out of the masses and propelled to the front because they took that and they applied it to the World War 1942 era. And you had the ability to fly planes, do vehicles, coastal defenses, all kinds of stuff. But the class structure is what made it really interesting. And Dennis, I was really hooked. I can't believe so long ago that this became one of those games because it was land friendly. You could play at LAN parties, you could play online, which at the time was not particularly great, but it became a really popular LAN competition game because you could get, I think at the time it was 32 on 32, not a ton of players, but it was enough to handle really pretty much as many people as we could get together back in those days for the early LAN party scene.
Yeah, well, that was the same with like other game popular games like Unreal Tournament. They had large maps like that. And you really could only play them in the LAN setting because there was so much data that was being transmitted over a modem back then. Yes, we had modems.
That's right.
And it became too laggy and you couldn't do that. But in a LAN setting, sky's the limit.
So 1942, unique because the classes forced you to play a little more cooperative. You had to have, to win, a mix of the different classes. You couldn't all be scouts and win. You couldn't all be anything really and win. And it introduced an area control style that was very capture the flag. And it had a couple of different modes in it. But primarily, we all played conquest mode, which really remains true today. And it was also unique because it was one of the first battlefields to have expansion, because it had to be, right?
Well, yeah, a lot of games during this era, they had an engine that would be released. An engine that had a game on top of it, but then you could extend it in some way, shape, or form. And that started with Quake back in the day, really.
Right?
Team Fortress, and then Unreal would have expansions as well.
So one of the interesting things about it is it came out with Battlefield 1942 Road to Rome, which added the Italian front and some more Italian, I believe French and Italian, yeah, there it is, French and Italian armies. We're cheating now because it's been so long.
But we're looking at the wiki, by the way.
But it also introduced Battlefield 1942 Secret Weapons of World War II, which was real interesting because it came out with stuff that was kind of rumored from World War II, like the V1 jets and jetpacks and stuff that we all remember reading about or hearing about the rumors that, well, you know, Hitler had these things or our special forces were jetpacking and that kind of stuff. And so they did that, which was really cool, but it kind of made it a little bit odd. Now, yeah. Later they introduced some other stuff to it also, which included some Vietnam mods. The other thing that helped the game be very successful, speaking of mods, is it was very moddable. So there were realism packs. There were hardcore packs that people would develop and put into the battlefield. And the reason that's so important is because a different little mod pack called Desert Combat was developed.
Oh, and so you were telling me about this offline before we started recording, and it was kind of the what made Battlefield popular.
So Desert Combat was a pretty popular mod. It ended up being the most popular mod at the time. And what it did was it really just kind of put the focus on tank battles, new maps. It cleaned up a bunch of stuff. And this mod was put out by a company, well, it became a company called Trauma Studios, which might also sound familiar. Desert Combat is really what revitalized the game for me. Interestingly enough, Digital Illusions CE, DICE, bought Trauma Studios, which became DICE New York, and gave them the task of helping to create Battlefield 2 based on Desert Combat. So Trauma Studios and DICE became intertwined, and that, at least, the rest is history. But the reason that's important is because that's what brought me into the fold, Desert Combat.
Okay.
So that was done way back on the Refractor engine, which is sort of interesting. And then they brought out Battlefield Vietnam, which I think is the first one that you played a lot of.
Yes. Now, Battlefield Vietnam was, ironically, a game that I picked up at Computex from one of the vendors that I was talking about, because they were just giving away games. And this is back when you would get games when you bought video cards and stuff, right? Well, I got a Chinese edition of Battlefield Vietnam that I still have shrink-wrapped. And since I had the game, I ended up buying it and tried to play a little bit, you know, fly some F4s and get in some Hueys. And unnecessarily difficult, primarily because there was so much stuff that you could do. Like, you could be on the boat, driving the boat around. You could be in a plane, flying the plane around. You could be in a helicopter, doing helicopter stuff. And each one of those had a different set of controls, and they would do different things, and it played completely differently.
A lot of people felt that Battlefield Vietnam was really just a reskin of Battlefield 1942. Mm-hmm. It was sold as a standalone some places and sold in other places as a add-on expansion pack. And it turns out you could launch them both from the Refractor 1 engine menu. But then in 2005, Refractor 2 came out.
Along with a new game called
Battlefield 2. And Battlefield 2 is really largely where things went into the modern combat. It had multiple add-ons to it. It had modern combat, special forces, Euro forces, armored fury. A lot of folks really liked it because of that. It had just a lot. I mean, really, to this day, a lot of content. Mm-hmm. A lot of maps, a lot of weapons, a lot of stuff. And it was really cheap. And in fact, I think Battlefield 2 is frequently free if you're an EA person these days. Keep an eye out for that. I don't know how playable it still is, but worth a look.
Yeah. Well, and they kept with the same look and feel from 1942. So you still have the ability to fly. You still have the ability to drive cars. They kept all of that together.
Yeah. So it was kind of just an engine upgrade, which makes sense. And it started the cadence that's ironically almost like when we talk about processors and stuff of them putting out a new Battlefield about every 2 years, which isn't entirely true, as you'll see, but it sure felt like it. So
the next major release
was Battlefield 2142. They took Battlefield 2 using the same Refractor 2 engine, and this came out in 2006, almost 2007, so the Christmas season, and they went far future. Now, this is still, to me, the only scenario, the only arena maybe is a better choice that they haven't revisited, and I hope that they do, because it was so cool. You had future mechs, you had future laser weapons. It had a mode that they have tried to replicate in different ways called Titan mode, where you attacked spaceships and tried to destroy them. Or there was a giant ground tank that like 20 people controlled that you'd try to destroy. So it had this really great movable base attack defend thing that I think inspired some of the more modern stuff like Planetside, for example. Then in 2008, they first released Frostbite, which is a revolutionary new engine at that time, still is in a lot of ways. Frostbite came out with Bad Company, and as you alluded, Frostbite was the first game engine that allowed really meaningful destruction of the level, what we now call levolution, because the level would evolve as you played, as you have damage, which has long separated the Battlefield franchise from things like Call of Duty Modern Warfare and the Call of Duty franchise.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I've noticed on this chart that we should probably bring up, it may or may not be important. I think it is. In 2008 and around this era was when Xbox, the 360, and Microsoft were really heavily involved with gaming studios saying you need to release to the console first.
Yes.
And that was when we started to see PC hardware getting way ahead to the point where it's like he could have a 5-6 year old PC and still play modern games because they were catering to the lowest common denominator.
Right.
Now,
and you make a very valid point because I see where you're going. The original Bad Company did not go on PC.
It was only on PlayStation and the Xbox.
And then they followed that with Refractor 2 and its dying breath in 2009 with Battlefield Heroes, which was horrible.
And it was only on the PC, but again, older game engine. Now, if we move forward, though, a game that I played a lot with you, which really got me involved with a bit of Battlefield, was Bad Company 2.
2010 with Frostbite 1.5. Now, there are a lot of oldie but goodies out there that have been playing Battlefield for a long time that will stake their claim that Battlefield Bad Company 2 is the best Battlefield game ever. And there are still servers alive out there right now. You can go play Battlefield. In fact, Edge Gaming, which is a clan that I'm frequently associated with, still has a server. And they put out a Vietnam also, which was also revolutionary and also really difficult to play.
Imagine that.
Shocker, but Vietnam has a lot of cover. It's kind of a camper map system just in general.
I think they had that same problem when it actually happened.
And can you believe they milked Refractor for another couple of games, Battlefield Online and Battlefield Play for Free, which I'm just going to pretend don't exist.
Yeah, because we're going to get into, what is it, 2011 or 2011, Battlefield 3. Now, we both were in the beta for that.
Absolutely.
And we did a podcast episode. I'll try to put that down
way
in the show.
Back then, and gosh, 2011, we've been doing this a long time.
Imagine that, right? But Battlefield 3 was different in that they started to do more online instead of having in-game menus. So you'd fire up the game and you would be able to do server browsing and stuff like that. You did, with Battlefield 3, all of this before you even launched the game. So you had a launcher that would operate in a browser, it's kind of web-based, mm-hmm. and it would contact the EA servers and then do balancing before you even launched the game.
Battlefield 3 had probably the best balancing. It had the best server management where you could run your own server, you could have server rules, mm-hmm. you could affect the game in a lot of different ways. And it had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 really large expansion packs stretching all the way into 2013. So 2 years of really great content. Now, the interesting thing about it is the last version of it was called Endgame. And not too badly, it sure was, but we already knew that Battlefield 4 was coming. Battlefield 3, a ton of content also. Going forward, we're going to see that increases and increases and increases, starting with Battlefield 3. But Battlefield 4 came out in 2013. Mm-hmm. Battlefield 4 is where I would probably stick my claim as my favorite Battlefield game. I loved Battlefield 4. And in fact, I was a server mod for many years on it because it had so many different types of combat. And it used, I believe, Frostbite 3?
Yeah, it was Frostbite 3. And as I'm scrolling through, Frostbite 3 was used all the way up until 2020, mm-hmm. all the way with Battlefield 5. So it had a lot of legs and a lot of expansions.
It kind of reminds me of some of the other larger engines in the sense that they would just keep making it better and better every year.
Yeah.
So Battlefield 4 had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think 11. Is it 11? No, it can't be. That's too many.
It had 3 years worth.
10. Yeah, 10 different mods. I was close. And they were all over the place. So many great maps. In fact, Battlefield 4 maps are still being rebuilt and put into Battlefield games now in what we call portal mode, which we'll come back to.
Yeah. We had Battlefield Hardline in 2015. So, I don't remember that as much.
So this is an interesting thing to talk about in the generations of Battlefield, because what Battlefield Hardline was an attempt to use the Battlefield title, the Battlefield engine, to create a different style of gameplay that, for lack of a better term, is kind of a cops and robbers thing. I think GTA was kind of a big thing. They wanted a city thing, so they had cars. You had attackers and defenders. You had to steal the money and get out in your vehicles. But what Battlefield Hardline did well was it introduced things like grappling hooks that we have today, different modes of transportation. Now, I will tell you that I'm in the camp of folks that say that Battlefield Hardline wasn't very successful because it had Battlefield in the name. And if they'd have just released it as Hardline using the Frostbite 3 engine, it would probably be a modern classic. But instead, what it was a tremendous disappointment to the folks that were looking for a new Battlefield game. And instead, they got cops and robbers and city bank robbery game.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Bad marketing, killing the game.
Now, they did produce quite a few expansions to that. I didn't play a lot of them, but Battlefield Hardline has a hardcore fan base to this day. You can still go out and play it. It's very cheap. And if you are a Battlefield or Call of Duty fan and you want to experience a different twist on the genre, go pick it up cheap.
Cool. And then, let's see, 2016, toward the end of it, we have Battlefield 1, which is another Battlefield game that we did on the podcast. It's a video podcast. And unfortunately, our podcast listeners did not go out to YouTube and check it out because it has very few views. And I can point fingers at everybody.
Oh, no, you guys, maybe it'll grow some legs because of this, because Battlefield 1 is still really fun to go play. Yeah. Now, it's done in, what is that, World War 1 is where the 1 comes from?
Yes.
So it has biplane combat, and you can charge it into combat on a horse with a sword. And the maps are actually really very good.
And I remember that.
What's fun about it for me is that the airplanes and stuff are really slow. It has trains that you can control, that sort of stuff. But to me, it was maybe the last time in Battlefield that I really enjoyed flying, because you could leisurely come down in your biplane and drop bombs and buzz the soldiers. Very easy to control, and it felt intuitive.
Ah, yes. And the one thing I remember, I should say, is the World War One, the trench tank. You know, the tank that would go over the trenches.
Yes.
That was actually really fun. It didn't move very fast at all, but it had a big punch.
Some really fun stuff there, and it stands alone with some really unique maps. Definitely worth a revisit.
Now, I really can't believe that we have 4 Battlefield games all on the same Frostbite 3 engine, because the next one is Battlefield 5.
Well, and it's interesting that you mentioned that, because that kind of leads to one of the problems that's plagued Battlefield for the last few years, and that is that once they figured out how to hack the Battlefield Frostbite engine, then they started to release the cheats and the trainers and the wall hacks, and so Frostbite 3, the game got kind of more and more exploitable as it went, because the engine was so long.
Yeah, it's been out for way too long.
And some of that bled over into the newest Frostbite engines, which we'll talk about a little bit in a minute. But Battlefield 5, to me, this is where I decided now in 2018, a bit older, to get involved in communities and clans. And I actually did some admin work and worked for a couple of different clans there, officially and unofficially, running servers, because Battlefield 5 was the last time that we were allowed to have our own servers. Can you believe that?
Yeah, that's the way that the modern web is moving. And by doing so, the developers have more control over the server and kind of can be a traffic cop instead of just allowing rampant cheating. Or at least that's the idea.
Well, that's what we thought too, but it did take away a lot of our ability to control our own communities, which became kind of the theme coming out of Battlefield 5. Now, they rented servers initially, but they owned them. You just paid them for the use, which kind of was the decline of the modern Battlefield clan system, because you didn't have that control. It was hard to build a community around it.
Well, yeah, because we'd have a clan server and say, hey, let's go hop on this server and play. Now, it's almost impossible to play with your friends because of the way the balancing works.
Which is a good, I think, segue into modern Battlefield. So in 2021, Battlefield 2042 came out. And I should mention that Battlefield 5 had a bit of a rocky launch because of a lot of things, but one of them was because we didn't have our own servers. So servers were difficult, unpredictable, laggy, but you couldn't do anything about it. You couldn't go find a good server. You didn't become a regular on, you know, an ego server, for example, because it was so difficult to do. And Battlefield 2042 went the same route, which was a shock to all of us. Even more so because they didn't put out as much content with 2042 and just felt rushed to release, which I know in the modern software world seems to be a problem with more and more of these big AAA titles.
Right. Well, and as we've talked before, 2042 is kind of a hodgepodge or a collection of previous Battlefield games and gaming experiences where you can kind of dial in what kind of game you want to play, what kind of weapons you want to have on there. So you can dial in, what is it, portal mode, right? So that way you can define what's going to be in that game, and that's the way you're going to play it.
Well, yes and no. So there are some challenges with 2042. There isn't a lot of content because when the game came out, it had such a backlash to how poorly it ran and how poorly the servers worked and the server browsers and how unstable everything was, that they spent a great deal of time, almost the first full year, fixing Battlefield 2042. And the sales weren't great. Lowest reviews of any Battlefield title ever. So if you look, you can see that the first add-on content for it, Zero Hour, came out in 2022.
Yeah, just right after the release.
It wasn't great. And then they put out 1, 2, 3, 4, and at this point, and they started this in Battlefield 5 too, they call them seasons. So that's the other big disappointment with Battlefield. So in Battlefield 5, you could buy the regular, the premium, the ultra, I think, or what they were, three levels, right? And the regular was just the base game, so you had to buy your DLCs. Makes sense. The deluxe had all the DLCs, and then the premium came with the stuff that most people don't care about. Skins and soundtracks and stuff.
Yeah.
And you could buy a box that comes with statues and physical maps and all that kind of collectible stuff. They gave you additional content regularly, skins and stuff, and they introduced in 5 coins where you could purchase stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the difference is in 5, you could earn coins through gameplay. In 2042, they really introduced a model that I would say was designed to be pay to win, or at least...
Yeah, the microtransactions.
At least microtransactions in the way of, you know, the hat generation of all of these other games, right? So, and they backpedaled on themselves. Oh, it'll just be cosmetics. And then they sort of backpedaled a little bit from that. But if you bought the premium stuff, you didn't end up getting really much of anything except for giving your money away. Yep. And it was the first time you'd pay over $100 for a Battlefield title, unless you bought some fancy collector's box.
Although when you add up all the DLC that you had to buy for Battlefield 5, for instance, it's well over $100, I'm sure.
Yeah. So if it was a good deal to get the season pass back in those days. Yep. 2042 lesser, and a lot of that was because not a lot of content has come out. So now we're at 2023, it's 6-1, and actually this week, as we're recording this, the final announced season, season 5, New Dawn, and it comes with, guess how many maps?
2.
One remake of another map that was crappy from the beginning, the last remake. And one new map. and a handful of what we call vault weapons, which is just exactly what you talked about. Weapons from previous Battlefield games that are being ported over.
Wow.
So what are we paying for? I don't know.
I don't know.
And so a lot of people are really angry, but what I can tell you is that Battlefield 2042 was not a great game when it started, but it was a good game. And then it became better every time they released a season. And with 2042, if you're just coming back to Battlefield, it's a freaking great game now. But it does still have some really nagging issues. It is still a little bit difficult to play with your friends because squads are still limited to four players. So it takes a little bit of trickery to join with your friends. They're going to fix that this week so that you can join at least on the same server and create a different squad. But you can't kick anyone out of your squad if they're a deadbeat. That's a little weird.
Oh.
There is no server browser still. Really weird.
Well, yeah, because they know how to pick servers better than you do.
There's no balancing. You get a random new group of people every map. They rotate the game modes, so not all game modes are available. They just rotate them. And Portal has some really great stuff going on, but it's really pretty restricted. So not a lot of people are playing it except for to gain experience or to go play, you know, some weird game mode with your friends. But the fact that those things are out there, even a sort of a scary state, gives you a ton more content.
Sure.
So that's 21 years of Battlefield, 12 major releases, Dennis.
Yes, that's a lot.
But a lot of people don't know that there is a lost Battlefield game, and I'm using air quotes around that.
Oh, yeah. Air quotes on radio.
There you go. So believe it or not, way back in, was it 2008, our friends at Dyson and Trauma released a game that didn't do as well because they released it under a different name called Frontlines Fuel of War. And if you look at the box art, it kind of looks like a Battlefield box, doesn't it?
Yes, a lot. Oh, and this is the Unreal 3 engine.
Yeah.
So, oh, and it's also console only because 2008, that's what happened.
But it is also now available. It was shortly after for Microsoft Windows. So Frontline Fuel of War was originally developed for the PlayStation 3 by THQ. And then it eventually did come out, but it also came out on the PC. And what is really cool about this game today is, oh, it's a steal of a cheap game. The downside is the multiplayer mode servers don't exist anymore, so you can only play this game single player or on a LAN. And I loved this game. I thought this was the future of Battlefield, and it just died. We played it at a few LAN parties, and everybody just went back to Battlefield, which we were familiar with. So it remains to this day the lost Battlefield knockoff out there. If you get a chance to pick this up, I would do it as a steal. Had dedicated servers at the time, was really unique. In fact, so much of it was like Battlefield, but it included things like drones. It had the little bomb disposal robots. It had a lot of stuff like that that it took years. In fact, 2042, right, was the first time those things were actually introduced into Battlefield.
Oh, that's right. They had the Robo Dog in 2042, didn't they? Yeah.
So now you know it's out there for you. So in theory, that's still in spirit a 13th Battlefield release that a lot of people have never heard of or even played.
I'm going to have to look for that, that's for sure. So we are, what, going on halfway through 2023 as of this recording. And if history holds true, it looks like we're due for another Battlefield game.
Well, I know I mentioned earlier the every other year thing, and that's mostly true, but I already mentioned, I think the reason for that, in my opinion, is because it took so dang long to get Battlefield 2042 fixed, and so little content has come out for it. I mean, I think, I'd have to count the maps, but there aren't many. And because they restrict the rotation, in any given week, there might only be three or four of them available. Now, fortunately, they've released some of the classic maps from Battlefield 4 and Battlefield 5. Valparaiso is my favorite out of those. That are kind of better, but they've been every time they release a new season, they've gone and reworked at least one of the original maps, and the final one, Kaleidoscope, will be fixed this week. Well, at least we hope it'll be fixed, and that will probably address some of the balance problems that are in 2042. Now, the last one, New Dawn, is most likely the last seasonal release for this because it's been now more than 2 years. Mm-hmm. They haven't announced a new Battlefield title because 2042 has had such a rocky life. Mm-hmm. And it's finally good. As I mentioned, please try it. We need more players. But it's also cross-play dependent, which has introduced some other problems that we haven't talked about. So you're playing against Xbox and PC folks, for better or for worse. But it has delayed the future of Battlefield, leaving us wondering what comes next.
Well, that is something that we talked about before we started recording. And I was thinking, well, what if we kind of, dream build?
Yes.
What the next Battlefield is going to be. Because we have basically all of these war genres throughout the entire 21 years. So we got World War II, we got World War I, we got Vietnam. We don't have the Korean War, but that was kind of World War II plus, so to speak. And then we have a couple of modern, not necessarily modern wars, but we're talking about modern people and modern equipment in these simulations.
Right.
So space was only done once or twice.
Well, really once. The 2042 is kind of a spiritual successor, but 2142 was that one. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'd like to see them go. I mean, we just had Modern Warfare go into the future and had some cool stuff. It's probably time for Battlefield to give it another go.
Yeah.
A lot of folks would like to see a return to Vietnam again with the modern engine. And we're already kind of doing some of the older maps in Portal, so I'm less confident in that. And you know, it's kind of a weird political world to try to do Vietnam again.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and the way that I see it, you know, as an outsider looking in, I haven't been playing Battlefield religiously like Mr. Darren here, but I see it as DICE has really done everything. And with 2042, they tried to put everything into a game like they had no more ideas about what to do.
Well, and that's, I think, where the Portal was going is we're going to release one framework and then we'll just add stuff into Portal so that you can play all these other game modes mm-hmm. and maybe turn it into a service instead of just a game, Portal.
Yeah, well, and if we look back, there's some history for that particular train of thought because we have the Frostbite 3 engine and what, four games were released on it, lots and lots of content. And now we have Frostbite without a number on it on servers that are controlled by the developer and this framework in place to allow them to go and just kind of, well, here's the new game, here's the new engine, this is how you can play it. And if NVIDIA has anything to do with it, I'm going to bring NVIDIA in here. They have that cloud gaming service, right?
Oh, yeah.
So now we could have Battlefield in this cloud service. They control everything about the ecosystem, and you can just log in and play the game. That might be kind of where it's going. I'm not necessarily on board with that just because I'm a bit of a classic gamer. I like to say, this is the type of game I'm going to play, and this is why I'm playing this one, instead of just logging into a map or logging into a server, and it just randomly gives me, here's the game mode you're going to play. It's like, I don't want to play that game mode.
I kind of agree, and it's a bit jarring, I think, to switch eras in the midst of play, which makes me wonder if we'll ever see a new Bad Company, which is maybe the other.
Well, maybe that's what's going to come next.
The Dark Horse contestant, perhaps.
Yeah. So, say, for instance, they do bring back a Bad Company. That was one of the game modes that I really liked. It was kind of four-person squads, if I remember correctly. Smaller squads. It wasn't really a big, you know, try and control an area. You're just trying to make it through to the end of, a campaign or something like that.
Oh my gosh, campaigns again.
Oh yeah. So if that sort of a game genre came back out, and knowing what we know now, what sort of things would you want to have in that game or would you like to see in that game that would make it the best game ever?
So to me, 2042 is a bit of a cop-out because it's future, but the game is really near future. I mean, you're still using weapons that you recognize today. The vehicles look a lot like today. Even the helicopters all look like things that are out today. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of in that camp where I want to see them do future right. Bring back the little mechs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Bring back, I don't know, spaceships. Give us something that's futuristic. Laser guns, mm-hmm. adaptive camouflage a la Crysis could be fun.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
You know, some really interesting stuff. And I think there's a lot of potential for them to go outside of traditional warfare motifs and embrace a real future thing.
And I can, you know, just kind of imagining it as you're talking now, you know, adaptive camouflage. Maybe that's restricted to just the scout, you know, the squishy little fast guy, right?
And there's always a rock, paper, scissors. That's kind of how Battlefield works. Mm-hmm. So something that counters it.
Yeah, you have to have the balance. You have to have, you know, the heavy that comes in. You can kill tanks. He moves really slow, so, you know, scouts can take him down or something like that. That sort of a balance, is that really what's missing in 2042? Originally, you were talking about balance was terrible. Yeah. And they've kind of made it better just because...
Well, with so many guns, they kind of blend. So every time there's a patch, there's always one or two guns that are the meta, right? They're just better. Mm-hmm. And that's true of every release. But remember that DICE also did the Star Wars Battlefront games.
Oh, that's true.
So we know they can do space, right? We know they can do futuristic. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, why not have, you know, laser swords in Battlefield Future? I don't know. I mean, it could happen.
It very well could happen. Now, in terms of, say, an anti-cheat.
Right.
You know, a lot of the exploits that happened in Frostbite 3 was just because the game engine was old. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were able to get in there and, you know, manipulate the game. They saw things coming over the network. They were able to sniff out packets and stuff like that. What sort of anti-cheats would you want to have in place that wouldn't necessarily even address the network sniffing or something like that? Because, you know, maybe there's something, some AI in the game that recognizes, hey, this person is a cheater, as the same way that you can recognize that they're a cheater.
Yeah, and it's sad because introducing crossplay really also in the latest Frostbite engine introduced external cheat machines like the Chronos Zen, for example, that you could purchase. They were designed for consoles originally to help consoles be competitive. You know, they do things like reduce the kick of your gun, but they can also do auto aim and all that sort of stuff. And they exist outside of the software, relatively difficult to detect. However, the Call of Duty folks figured it out.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe we could figure that out in the new one. I mean, in a perfect world, we wouldn't need crossplay, but, you know, let's face it, as the consoles become more and more like computers, we're seeing a bigger blend of those two worlds, for better or for worse. And at least in the Battlefield 2042 world, in a lot of ways, having crossplay has what saved the game from dying. Because when it wasn't great, it was still one of the best games on console.
Yeah. And really the only difference between console and PC, aside from, hey, this is a console and this is a PC, is the interface. We have keyboard, mice, we have dedicated controllers on the PC that enhance our gameplay.
Right.
We have surround sound audio that is arguably more enhanced than what you would normally get on a console because it's designed kind of for the home theater. And on the console, you have, you know, thumbsticks and stuff that you have to deal with. Some people are really good at that. I'm not.
Well, and when they introduce the aids to help the console players compete, they create other imbalances because the people that are good with a controller now have really great assistance that the PC players don't have. And the contrast to that is, yes, you can still hook a keyboard and mouse up to your console and dominate the folks that don't have it. Yep. But in crossplay, the PC players and the console players are always going to be at odds because the technology's there, the aids are different, and we can't really separate them. So I think a better anti-cheat needs to be there to prevent that. We need to have better server matching so that we don't have lag issues. When you shoot somebody and they're at a different ping than you, you think you're hitting them. They don't. What does it look like? Looks like hacking.
Very well. Very well. Now, the one of the other complaints that you always brought up, even with Battlefield 3 initially, was being able to play together. You know, play with clanmates, with squads.
So Battlefield 2042 kind of killed all that. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like DICE thinks you only have three friends, right? Because you can only ever play with four, which kind of killed the clans. Not having servers finished off the clans, randomizing every match to prevent server stacking. Okay, I get that. Mm-hmm. Killed the clan. So today it's very difficult to get everybody in a game together.
A couple of other games that I've seen some streamers play, they share a code with the people that they want to play with. And once you join the lobby, you enter that code and then you match up with those people. And I'm thinking that if they implemented something like that within this Battlefield franchise, you could have all your clanmates just have this code sharing. It's like, hey, let's see who's online.
Well, really, if they could figure out balancing again, like they did in Battlefield 5, right? You could keep your group of friends together and go server to server. And in theory, they would match you with other folks. And that worked great on every other Battlefield. I think it was just lazy and not having a server browser that made that go. In fact, server browser is probably pretty high on my list of things that I'd like to see in the next one. I don't want to join a server that's empty. I don't want to join a server that's full of bots if I can find a server that has people in it. And I'll wait in line to do so. Or I'll go to maybe a higher ping server that's mostly full rather than play in an empty low ping server. And the fact that they took that away from us means I spend a lot of time sitting in a queue or sitting in a server waiting for a game to fill. And that's just a poor experience on any console, PC, you name it. It shouldn't take 3, 4, or 5 minutes to find a game. I should be able to go, oh, this one's empty. Let me go to this other one. And if they can't do that, then they need to just figure out, all right, your region's not very full right now. Would you like to expand the search, which some games have done?
That's true. Yeah, because you have your local area within a certain ping range mm-hmm. or something like that. If anything's available, that's what you get. If you want to expand it, then you can, you know, you go out, you know, 2 or 3 states or whatever that...
Yeah, and, you know, depending on your ping, like I normally ping in at about 3840, which is not great, but it's good, you know. Mm-hmm. And on an East Coast server, I'm pinging at 100. Well, I can tell you, I'd way rather ping it at 100 than sit and not play.
Well, that's true.
So those are my wish list items for the next one. I'd love to see Titan mode. Love to see them really embrace a future mode. And honestly, just let us play with our friends. Please, EA.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS and follow us on Twitter. This has been an Engine Lane production, copyright 2023. Thanks for listening.